You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
I'm Brian Wilson alongside Larry O'Connor.
Everybody in America has a Social Security number. I mean, I got it when I first got a job, I remember, when I was like 13 or 14 years old. Right. But my kids have, my babies had Social Security numbers. When they were born, they're now issuing Social Security numbers, and you got to use it for your taxes. That number stays with you for life, right? But have you ever wondered, what about these illegal immigrants? We keep hearing from Democrats, oh, well, they're working, and they're trying to live the American dream, and they're paying taxes. Well, how are they doing that if they're here illegally and they don't have tax ID numbers, if they don't have Social Security numbers? Well, Bob Siegel is an investigative reporter at WTHR in Indianapolis, and he has come up with an unbelievable story about what the IRS does when they find someone who has obtained illegally and used illegally a Social Security number. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
What did you uncover here? What does the IRS do in this case?
Well, most of us would never really dream about just allowing someone else to use our Social Security number. It's really not a good idea, because identity theft and all kinds of other things can happen. But the IRS is actually doing that for you. They're letting other people use your Social Security number. If an undocumented worker who's in the United States is paying taxes, they're given an ITIN number, an individual taxpayer identification number assigned specifically to them so that they can pay taxes on the income that they earn in the United States. The issue here is that in order to do that, the IRS is also allowing them to use someone else's Social Security number in order to get employment. It's something that there are multiple federal laws against, but the IRS simply looks the other way. Many undocumented workers, in order to get employment, they obtain a Social Security number. Sometimes that Social Security number belongs to someone else. It could belong to you. And when they pay taxes, millions of times they are putting down their ITIN number, and then they're also including someone else's Social Security number to be able to show the income that they earned, and the IRS actually encourages them to do that. They want to see where the income came from, so the IRS simply looks the other way when an undocumented worker does that, and our investigation showed that millions of people are impacted, and if you're one of the individuals whose Social Security number is being used without your permission, the IRS will not tell you that that is happening.
Oh, outrageous.
An internal policy that specifically tells IRS employees that if they see that happening, and if you are to call in and complain to say what's going on here, those IRS employees are not allowed to tell you that it's actually happening.
Well, what is the justification for that? I mean, do they have any kind of legal underpinning that supports that position? Because it seems to me identity theft is a crime.
It is a crime, but the IRS doesn't refer to it as a crime. We obtained internal IRS policies for whistleblowers who came to WTHR, or the NBC station in Indianapolis, and those internal policies that the IRS has refers to it as borrowing. So someone who would be using your Social Security number without your permission, the IRS refers to them as a borrower.
Oh, my God.
And the IRS's position on this is, look, we're not responsible when it comes to policing who's using what in order to get employment. We're just responsible for collecting taxes, and therefore this is not a tax administration issue. Now, the Inspector General at the Treasury Department sees it very differently. For more than 15 years, the Inspector General has been screaming about this, and we have those internal reports which show the Inspector General has been saying, look, you really shouldn't be doing this, and at least if this is happening, you should be telling taxpayers if they're Social Security number is being used without their permission. But
yes,
up to this point, the IRS has not done that.
Look, if you deal with the IRS and you make a math error or put a decimal point in the wrong place, if you do anything at all, you can be called on the carpet. And they have no compunction about coming at you full tooth and fang if you make an honest mistake or if you have a misunderstanding about what tax policy is. I want to, you know, given the fact that our tax code is about as tall as 10 phone books put together, it's easy to understand how that might happen. But in a case where they know that a law has been violated, they actively turn their eyes away and say, no, not our problem.
Well, to get to your point, we actually we put the IRS policy together, and it's actually about 50 phone books put together. And if you go to WTHR.com, you can see it's actually more than 21,000 pages printed out. That's how big the IRS code is. And we actually did show exactly how large that book is. But to your point, that's exactly why IRS whistleblowers came forward, because they see this identity theft happening every day over and over again, and they can see the person who's stealing your Social Security number. Keep in mind, they have filed a tax return to be able to pay taxes and also to be able to get credits back from the IRS and to be able to get refunds. And these folks who work at the IRS, they can see who those people are, where they live. They can see all they need to know about these individuals to be able, theoretically, to be able to get law enforcement involved for a case of identity theft, but IRS policy doesn't allow them to take any action. And in fact, some whistleblowers, they were actually reprimanded by their bosses at the IRS when they tried to bring this to their boss's attention. They're literally told, look the other way. Oh. Our policy allows for it. After all, these are borrowers. These are not thieves or identity thieves.
No, they are.
You know what? They're considered borrowers.
Let's get to that. First of all, they paid money to obtain that Social Security number. So by allowing them to continue to do that, you're encouraging more identity theft because you're creating a market for it. But second, let me ask you this, Bob Siegel. Let's say someone stole my Social Security card, and they're an illegal immigrant, and they're working and earning money on that. If they don't pay their taxes, you know, if they don't actually file a 1040, am I on the hook for that money that was earned? Is the IRS going to come after me and say, hey, you earned money that you didn't report because it's here's your Social Security number?
And that's one of the ways that we also found out about this. So we went out and we talked to victims here in Indiana. They receive a letter from the IRS saying, look, we on your tax return, we see this job that you worked in Fort Wayne, for example, and the income you reported there, but you didn't report income from the factory job that you have in North Carolina, and therefore you owe us more money, and you owe us penalties on that money that you didn't report. And of course, you know, the gentleman in Fort Wayne says, wait a second, I've never lived in North Carolina, I've never worked there. And so then they've got a year-long process to prove to the IRS that it's not them.
You have to prove your innocence. You're guilty until proven innocent with the IRS.
Oh.
And meanwhile, this is all because it was created by the IRS's own internal policy. Unbelievable reporting, Bob. Bob, are there any politicians who are trying to change this? We know no change will come from the administration, but Congress can step in here.
Yeah, Dan Coats, senator from Indiana, he's pretty outraged about this. He sits on the Finance Committee. So right now, behind the scenes in the Finance Committee, they're working on ways to try and figure out what they might be able to do about this. They did grill the IRS commissioner a few weeks ago when he testified before the Finance Committee.
Right.
So they're working right now to set up meetings with the IRS to see if they can come up with some type of compromise. But it is, it's a very politically sensitive situation. It impacts millions of people. So how quickly something will be done, I'd love to say something will happen tomorrow.
Well, if it becomes a presidential election issue, it will, and I hope some of these presidential candidates understand. Because, again, this is one of those arguments about illegal immigration that we need to have as Republicans and conservatives on our turf, because no one should be able to stand up and defend this. Great reporting, Bob.
Bob, let me just ask you a quick question. Have you been audited?
You know, it was 4 years ago we did a story showing how the IRS was actually, allowing millions of undocumented workers to be getting billions of dollars in tax credits that they weren't legally entitled to. About 27 million people watched those stories online at WTHR.com, and so far, knock on wood, I have not yet been audited, but I have a feeling my day might be coming.
Let us know if that happens. All right, our guest is Bob Siegel with WTHR in Indianapolis with some just an astonishing story. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Have a great day, guys.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
You're listening to Mornings on the Mall with Brian and Larry. I'm Larry O'Connor alongside Brian Wilson, and joining us right now, Senator Dan Coats, Republican of Indiana, for a little while longer. He announced his retirement earlier this year, but he is a member of the Senate Finance Committee and joins us now. Thanks for being here, Mr. Senator.
Good morning.
You know, we yesterday interviewed a reporter from your neighborhood there in Indianapolis, actually, and he uncovered a story. Bob Segal is his name, and he uncovered a story about how the IRS is turning a blind eye to illegal immigrants who are using stolen Social Security numbers. According to the IRS, they say, oh, well, they're just borrowing those Social Security numbers. How is this not identity theft, and how are you, as a senator, allowing the administration to not enforce the law?
Well, those are all very good questions, and thanks to Bob, who uncovered this and then brought it to our attention, we learned that the IRS has identified any kind of fraud or stealing someone's ID, Social Security number, as undocumented aliens in order to protect themselves from. Well, they want to pay their taxes. The employer may have withheld them, but they've stolen someone's identity and used it to put themselves in a better position for hopefully gaining some kind of citizenship or whatever in the future. The amazing thing here is the IRS basically says, oh, they didn't steal it. They just borrowed it, and they borrowed it for a time for this purpose. And by the way, it's not our job to notify the victim here. It's our job just to collect the money. And total disregard for the person whose identity was stolen. And then when they go to file their taxes, IRS says, hey, wait a minute. You're behind. You already got your refund. Oh, that went back to the guy who, quote, borrowed it. So it was right. just ridiculous to define something like this as borrowing. It was stolen.
Well, what can you do as a senator to try to correct this policy?
Well, during a hearing, we had the commissioner of IRS, and I directly described all this, and he was aware of it, but had really no compassion at all for the impact of the victim. We had a person here in Indiana who couldn't get insurance for his family for 6 months because somebody said, you're using a false Social Security number. Somebody else has that number. He said, well, wait a minute, that's my number. It took 6 months to figure this out, so they were without insurance. So what we told the commissioner is this has got to be fixed. He said, well, it's not our job. I said, well, it's somebody's job. It's either your job or some other agency if you can't do it. So we basically said, we want to sit down and work this out so you will take care of this. And if you don't, we're going to legislate so that you have to or somebody has to. So we're moving this through the committee, and we're also have a meeting set up maybe as early next week with the commissioner to try to rectify this. Some people are being hurt by what's happening.
Well, I mean, at the very least, shouldn't the people who have their identity stolen be notified? That doesn't seem like it's much more than sending out a letter with a stamp on it.
You know, the IRS tried a partial program on this, a pilot program, to do just that. And they decided, no, that's extra work. We're not going to do that anymore. And they dropped that. I mean, this is government that operates by numbers. There's not a personal face. There's not a personal family, a personal story behind each one of these things. There are people becoming victims because someone has stolen their number and stolen their name, and that has to be addressed. And you can't just brush it off by simply saying, oh, that's not what we do here. And no, have you notified anybody else? No. Is there anything in place to notify the victim? No. Well, that's just unacceptable.
You know, I got to ask you, Senator, I'm always fascinated by how you do your job and how you sit on these committee hearings with your colleagues from across the aisle and how they're able to defend things like this. Can you just give us some insight? Because I know that the issue of immigration and immigration reform is a challenging one for many up on Capitol Hill. But there are some things that I think most Americans agree on, no matter what their political persuasion. And one of them is that someone in this country illegally, and anyone in this country, should not get away with identity theft. And a government agency involved in you know, collecting taxes, like the IRS, they should be part of the solution, not encouraging the problem. Do you have any Democrats on this committee with you that in some way is defending the current policy? And if so, what is their position? How do they do that?
It was very silent across the aisle in terms of this, but I think everybody got the message, and that is I don't want to go home and tell people that this is okay. So we're trying to publicize this thing, thanks to Bob, and we're trying to shame the IRS in looking at this from the victim standpoint and not from just simply collecting tax dollars.
Do you find that that we've just reached a point where government is so big and so clunky and so badly organized that this is the kind of thing that you see not only at the IRS but largely across the board, where people lose sort of touch with the fact that they are employed by the people, not the other way around?
You know, you've hit the nail right on the head here. These are not bad people working for the government. But this thing is so, the government is so dysfunctional. It tries to do so much. It's involved in so many things. It's become very impersonalized. And there's no longer thoughts about, well, what about the impact on the taxpayer? What about the impact on the ordinary citizen? It's all done with mass numbers. Clearly, whether it's the IRS or any other agency of the federal government, you find all kinds of dysfunction, but also kind of a no longer connecting with people who are victims of all this. It's not just IRS fraud, but it's mistakes in terms of documenting people. It's the inability to sign up and take care of veterans. I mean,
yeah.
It's just gone and grown beyond what I think is needed and what is responsible leadership in government, and it just continues to grow and grow and grow.
All right. Well, Senator Dan Coats, it is such a pleasure to have you here, and thank you for joining us.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. The best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us on the line right now is Representative Jeff Miller, Chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. He serves on the Armed Services and the Intelligence Community Committees as well. Good morning to you, Congressman. Glad to have you here on this Veterans Day.
Ryan, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, there was a time not too long ago when we realized that our veterans were getting horrific care from the VA, and an attempt was made to try to get this problem solved. The Obama administration went to work on it, and members of Congress began, increasing their oversight of the situation. I'm just sort of curious, as we sit here today on this Veterans Day, are we any better off than we were?
They're making some changes around the edges, but the problem was a systemic problem, and until they realize that the culture has got to change at the VA, people need to be held accountable, and VA has to be transparent. We're the committee that has the oversight responsibility. We actually uncovered the wait time debacle in Phoenix that the IG said was systemic at 110 facilities around the country, but they keep pushing back saying they need more people and more money to solve the problem, and that's not going to resolve it. They have to change the culture within the system.
All right, so if it's getting better around the edges, you know, why can't you, as the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, a man who has some control over the pocketbook and over the budget, why can't you bring some pressure to bear?
We've brought as much pressure as we know how, and we will continue to bring pressure. The problem is the focus from President Obama has not been as direct as it needs to be. As far as I know, the president's never even been over to the VA central office, which is one of the closest agencies that he has to him. He can walk right across his yard to go to the central office. But look, since 2009, we have increased VA's budget 73%. Huge increases in dollars, but they still say they need more money in order to do it. What they need to do is to be more efficient. The CHOICE Act that we passed in August of last year really was a huge fundamental change to be able to allow veterans to choose where they get their health care.
Representative Miller, I'm confused here because my future president, Hillary Clinton, said this about the Veterans Affair.
Overall, veterans who do get treated are satisfied with their treatment.
Much
now,
more so than people in the regular system.
It's exactly right. Now, nobody would believe that from the coverage that you see and the constant berating of the VA that comes from the Republicans. And
by the way, that was future Defense Secretary Rachel Maddow chiming in with her. So explain this to me. Is there some secret knowledge that the former Secretary of State and now chief fundraiser for the Clinton Foundation has that you don't have? Because apparently veterans love their care and everything's great at the VA, and it's really just a Republican made-up controversy.
Well, interesting. interestingly enough, our committee is a bipartisan committee, and we've issued subpoenas that have been 100% bipartisan, unanimous votes. This is not a witch hunt by the Republicans. She may want to use this for political purposes. We're trying to change the VA to serve the very people that it's supposed to serve. Look, it just, this happens to be falling under President Obama. I'm not saying that it has always been great under Republican presidents, because it hasn't been. And look, the idea that people like the health care they receive once they get into the system, probably true for a great many, and they keep saying, yeah, they keep coming back, but you need to look at the economic incentive that they have. It doesn't cost a veteran to come to the VA, where if they use other types of insurance and even Medicare, there are co-pays that come with that, and so they get a hit to their pocketbook if they go outside the system.
So if you can all, I mean, I know that you're trying to be as bipartisan as possible, because you have done a great job, Mr. Chairman, of making Democrats and Republicans both work together. But I have to point out that the other major candidate for the Democrats is Senator Barry Sanders. And if there is a problem at the VA, he was the chairman of that committee over on the Senate side, wasn't he? I mean, what did he do to fix this problem when he had the chance?
Well, interestingly enough, Bernie and I were able to work across the aisle and bring, as I said, one of the largest changes to the way VA delivers health care to veterans that's been made since the agency became existent. We had the choice program that allowed veterans to use their own decision-making ability as to where they want to go to receive their health care. In the past, VA is the one that said, well, we choose to send you outside. Now some veterans have the opportunity to say, no, we don't want to go to the VA. We want to go to the private care. We'd like to expand that. It's going to be a while before we can do it. But I think veterans need to have the opportunity to get things that other people do fine in the private sector, and let VA get back to doing what they do very, very well, and that is spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, issues that only they do very, very well.
It would seem, though, when you talk about the VA, one of the studies that came out was that the doctors were not doing a very effective job of seeing enough patients. Now, that seems to be a pretty simple thing to fix.
Well, interestingly enough, you ask the VA, you know, about physicians and how many patients they see a day. They really can't tell you, but the studies that we've been able to do and pull up is that the average VA physician will see 8 to 10 patients a day, where a private sector physician will see 25 to 30 patients a day.
Well, yeah, that's my memory. Can't we put some pressure on them to change that? I mean, it seems like that's a scheduling issue.
That's exactly what it is. And we have been bringing that to VA's attention. And so what VA says, well, if you give us more money, we can build more exam rooms and allow vet docs to see more people. They have to change the way they provide the service. I will tell you this. Secretary McDonnell understands how health care needs to be delivered in the 21st century, but you have a bureaucracy that's out there that wants to keep doing it the same way over and over again.
The way you solve that problem is you fire a bunch of people and you get some better people in there.
You got that right. Well, we passed legislation in the House. It got bottled up in the Senate. Senator Blumenthal, the ranking member on the VA committee, has put a hold on it, would not allow a vote to take place. The secretary is opposed to it, and the president has said he would veto it, and that's giving them the authority to fire people who can't or won't do their job. Accountability is the key to making the biggest changes at the VA.
All right, veterans. Well, there you heard it. I mean, the Democrats, between Blumenthal and the president, they don't want incompetent bureaucrats at the VA who are not giving the care that our veterans deserve. They don't want them to be fired. That's the bottom line.
Representative Jeff Miller, chairman of the House Veteran Affairs Committee, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Happy Veterans Day.
Veterans Day.
Worn the uniform.
Amen, sir. Thank you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
I'm Larry O'Connor alongside Brian Wilson. Joining us right now, our old friend Michelle Malkin. She's got a brand new book out. It's called Sold Out, How High-Tech Billionaire and Bipartisan Beltway Crap Weasels Are Screwing America's Best and Brightest Workers. Oh, boy. Beltway Crap Weasels. It's like you read my diary, Michelle Malkin. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brian and Larry. It's so great to meet you both. And, you know, my real ulterior motive is to get crap weasel entered into the Oxford English
Listen,
Dictionary.
It's not a term I've heard before, but one that we both heartily embrace.
Listen, yeah. Michelle, I thank you so much for writing this book. I haven't read it, but I have read a lot about it already. And it sounds like you are blowing apart one of the things that drives me nuts about the argument about immigration in our country, and that is all these high-tech firms, Facebook, Microsoft, all these people who are trying, who they say that American workers don't have the kind of education and skills to be able to do these programming things. We got to bring them in from China and India. Is that just a lie?
It is. It is the biggest, fattest, juiciest lie of the Silicon Valley CEOs, their tech lobbyists in D.C., and much of the open borders lobby. The debate about immigration has largely been dominated by, and rightly so, about what's going on the southern border, massive illegal immigration. It was the subject of my very first book in 2002, Invasion. But meanwhile, there's been this massive, massive destruction of American high-tech jobs and this sabotage of American high-skilled workers. These are our best and brightest. And the statistics are stunning. Now, people who study this over the last 20, 25 years are very familiar with the fact that there is no such thing as an American high-skilled worker shortage, but it's been repeated over and over again by the open borders press, everyone from the Wall Street Journal to the New York Times, and yet, in communities all over this country, there are stories over and over again, and they're finally breaking out just by sheer force. Disney workers, Southern California Edison workers, workers at Toys R Us, who are extremely excellent and competent at their jobs, but are being undercut by something called the H-1B visa program, which is basically a massive cheap worker pipeline into this country from offshore outsourcing firms from India.
You mentioned, and I want you to go back to it, that there's some journalistic malpractice at play here.
Oh, no question about it. I think part of it has to do, and of course this is something that we've covered for so long, guys, in part it's ideological bias by a reflexive left-wing media, and also in some parts it's laziness. A lot of these laws, of course, are incredibly complex, and the propaganda that's put out by these front groups, which we detail in a chapter that we call Legion of Doom, repeat the same lies over and over again, and obviously they become embedded as truth, and that's what we're trying to debunk and really try to educate people. I consider this an evangelical mission because I think it is one of the hidden sleeper issues that's finally coming to fore in the presidential campaign season.
I would love to follow up on this. But Michelle, I think you just walked past a nuclear power plant or something, though. We're getting a weird hum coming on your phone. I'm not sure where it is, but hopefully, I don't know, are we going to be able
to... Yeah, maybe we should reestablish it while we... Can we do that right
Let's try to reconnect because it's going to be uncomfortable for the listeners, Michelle.
Gotcha.
And we've got... Because I really want to hear more about this. I mean, this is my...
We got some stuff we need to ask her.
The bottom line is this is a lie that I am so tired of hearing. And I have so many family members who have engineering degrees and who are getting their degrees and they're coming out. And they agree. They've told me there's no shortage. They go to their classrooms and there are plenty of American citizens who are all getting these jobs.
Yeah.
I want to know what it is. Why I believe, and I'll just state what it is, and I'll maybe Michelle can confirm this. These high-tech firms, Facebook, Microsoft, Sun Microsystem, all these various programming entities and all these high-tech firms who are pushing for these visas to come in, they're getting workers from India and China and other countries to come in on these visas to do these programming work. And let's face it, they're coming from basically a third-world country. They're coming with very different expectations
of what they should be
for their jobs and for their career, on their pay, on their benefits, how they're treated as employees. And, Michelle, I'm just wondering, is that what's behind this? Is it because they basically want these foreign workers from third-world countries to do this work that should be compensated pretty well, but they're doing it for, you know, for peanuts, and they can treat them like dirt?
Yeah, that's right. It's kabuki theater. And by the way, that was Mark Zuckerberg obviously hacking my phone line.
Yes, exactly.
Look, the law says that there are certain prevailing wage requirements that were put in place in 1990 when the law was passed as a guarantee that American workers were not going to be undercut and sabotaged by a program that's supposed to be of a benefit to us. I mean, all of these visa programs are supposed to put American workers first and foremost, and that is another big fat lie. And so, yeah, you know, why do you think it is? I mean, why is it that Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg march up onto Capitol Hill begging for these H-1B visa workers, claiming that there's some worker shortage, and then on the other hand, turn around in Google's case and brag that for every job position that they advertise, they're inundated with 1,000 or more applications.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Here,
yeah.
Domestically.
Right. I want to change topics as I can because there is an amazing story that broke late yesterday that is quite fascinating for those who follow the immigration issue, and it's that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday in a 2-1 ruling backed up the Texas judge saying that the president's amnesty program that he tried to invoke, even though many people said it was unconstitutional, turns out they agree it is unconstitutional.
Yes, and this injunction is incredibly significant, and upholding it by the Fifth Circuit. They called the case that the 26 states led by Greg Abbott when he was Attorney General, now Governor, have made is quote-unquote impressive and likely to be upheld should it go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Of course, those corruptocrats at the DOJ and DHS have gone absolutely bananas. And I have reminded people, for those who haven't followed the trajectory of this entire case, that the Texas judge actually had to call out the lying of the DOJ lawyers, because even after he issued that injunction, they went ahead and authorized thousands more of these work documents for the so-called DACA and DAPA beneficiaries, even in the face of the injunction, and the government had to face sanctions for that. I think that it is heartening because it shows that when Washington fails to do its job, when all the people that we send there to do checks and balances on this imperial, out-of-control president, when they fail to do their job, people are able to do it in court.
Yeah, and via the states as well, thank God. It was the states that brought this lawsuit. Michelle Malkins, our guest, the book is sold out, How High-Tech Billionaires and Bipartisan Beltway Crap Weasels Are Screwing America's Best and Brightest Workers. And really fast, Michelle, we've got a debate on Fox Business Network tonight. 8 of the candidates running for president and the Republican side will be there. There'll be lots of financial and business questions. If you were on the panel, boy, how great would that be to have Michelle Malkin, one of the moderators. What question would you ask these candidates or any specific candidates specifically about the subject of illegal immigration and your book, which focuses on this insanity of these visas?
Well, first I would ask what exactly they're going to do. Exactly they're going to do to stop the massive systemic layoffs and firings of American high-skilled workers who are being replaced by these H-1B mediocre substitutes and who are being forced to train them as a condition for their severance before they're let go. The second question I'd ask is related to the second section of the book, because I think that everybody talks about comprehensive immigration reform, and they never talk about comprehensive immigration enforcement. That means not just at the border, but a reexamining of every single one of these visa programs, which are being massively abused, exploited, fraud in everything from the B1 and F1, L1 programs, and the OPT program, which is basically a cheap foreign student pipeline into these tech companies.
Right.
We
got
to put a stop to it, and I want to know what these candidates are going to do about it.
We got to leave it there, Michelle Malkin, F1, H1B. You're A1 with us, Michelle Malkin.
That's right. And we want to mention that the book is called Sold Out, but it is not sold out. You can still get it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
All right, so it's time to get up. And you want a voice. You want a friendly voice to wake you up. And apparently some women in America today, they want a European voice to wake them up. Take a listen.
It's time to wake up, my love. It's time to wake up, my love.
Oh, you've got
it's
to.
It's time
kidding,
to wake
man.
Up, my love.
This is how you're supposed to start your day.
Yeah. There is an app.
Women like this?
Better way to wake up.
Apparently they do. There's an app out there called Morning Man, and you set your alarm so that a sexy sounding guy comes on the on your iPhone there and starts waking you up. Here's some more.
Well, you know, a good girl and get out of bed upstairs and make me some breakfast. I do not have all day.
So there are a lot of lonely women out there.
Apparently so. Yeah.
To get a special alarm clock.
It's an app.
You're gonna get.
It's time to wake up, my love.
It's
time to wake up, my love. It's time to wake up, my love. Isn't this a better way to wake up?
Oh, come on! You're going to get this French Chippendales dancer to wake them up with their voice in there. Who wants that in there? Here's the thing. I'm going to save you. Ladies.
Yeah.
Ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to save you all a lot of time and effort with that app right
That's
now.
That's right.
Just set your clock radio there next to the nightstand.
That's right.
105.9 FM or AM 630 WMAL. And you'll have this voice to wake you up.
Good morning, girls. It's time to get up. No. Come on, baby. It's time
to get up. No. You've got to stop that right now. Actually, I was expecting a yee-haw. Get on up out of bed. I'm Brian Wilson. Ladies, I think we are doing you a public service here and saving you money. You can have us wake you up, which you probably already do.
That's right.
And it's working well for you.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM WMAL.